Good morning.
Morning, John.
Or I suppose afternoon to Giacomo.
Hi.
Okay, we've come to the start of the hour, but we'll give it a couple of minutes probably to allow more people to trickle in. Hopefully, we can get pretty good attendance today, but we'll see. Nick, we don't have any news or announcement slides, so if you wanted to go ahead and start your screen share, that'd be fine, but don't feel obligated. I can see your slides. They look good. I think we've got a decent number of people here now. So let's go ahead and get started. So today we have a summary of the recent LPC EFT workshop at Notre Dame. Nick Smith will be giving that summary. And I will remind everyone that this is an open meeting, not a CMS internal meeting this week. So please make sure that we keep everything that should be CMS internal out of this meeting today. All right. Whenever you're ready, Nick, please go ahead.
Okay, can you hear me?
I hear you just fine. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I can get started then. So yeah, this is a summary of the workshop that was now a couple weeks ago. Kind of in terms of how it was organized, I thought I'd briefly kind of go through, how we planned it out and the goals of it. So the first day was a tutorial. There was a nice introduction to EFT, thanks to Benoit Hussey and Adam Martin, two theorists that work in that area. And then after that, we kind of went into this exercise where people would start with a Magraph card and using SMEF-SIM UFO model, go through nanogen to histograms to combine just to see a pipeline, you know, a sketch of a pipeline for a potential analysis, just to get people familiar with the different steps and the different tooling. And then taking off of that tutorial, we had a hackathon Tuesday and Wednesday where people worked in small groups on generating a sample or any other project that they felt was worth the time, the collaboration time. I thought this was actually a very effective. We saw a lot of people interacting with each other, and that was really nice. On Wednesday, actually, we got a bonus tutorial on effective field theories in SMEF from Michael Peskin. And that was really excellent. I have to say, just, you know, as we were leaving the room, I had never seen so many people immediately go to whiteboards and start drawing Feynman diagrams before. Like, people were very like excited about this after that tutorial. They felt like they had the tools they needed to ask questions. So that's good. Then the last 2 days, you know, was a workshop where we had thematic sessions with extended discussion time and then several invited speakers. All the sessions were recorded and are available on the agenda now already. So feel free to go watch those if you're interested. A bit about the participant statistics. We had 50 registrations, and we also asked during registration, you know, what kind of session would you be interested in? So people got to choose 3 of the 5 so that we would have at least some people that didn't select all. And so you can see the popularity varies by the topic and what these topics mean. I'll go into in the next slide. But yeah, you can see maybe a waning interest in unfolding, which you'll maybe see aspects of later on in the talk. So the session themes, we start with How Far Beyond Linear, which is basically focusing on issues of truncation and validity with an interpretation of results with an eye towards practicality. So this is things like, you know, dimension 6 squared, dimension 8, et cetera, multiple insertions. Then we had Building a Sample Library, which is how to best generate simulation samples for use in data analysis. Logistics, how to bring a diverse array of measurements into a cohesive whole. Specific consideration for unfolded results, which is basically how to design fiducial measurements for later use in EFT interpretations, and then the benefits and limitations of that. And then the last theme was specific considerations for reconstruction level results, which is how best to design analyses directly targeting inference of EFT parameters. So this is, you know, let's say direct reconstruction level binning or simulation-based inference techniques if you're into ML. It's interesting to contrast these themes with the LHC EFT working group areas, because as we were putting this program together, we never thought to compare our themes to the areas. But if you do it after the fact, you can see some matching. For example, How Far Beyond Linear really lies in the formalism. Sample library kind of blends prediction and tools and fits and systematics. Logistics obviously fits, and then unfolded and reconstruction level really gets into kind of experimental measurements and observables. So you can see we touch 4 of the 4 working group areas, and one of the talks actually also kind of gets into, actually 2 of the talks get into looking at things from the perspective of a UV model. So that was nice. As for the summary, we are in the process of drafting a summary document. The session chairs become the section editors for this. All the speakers have already contributed a 1-paragraph summary of the talk, which is I'm really happy about. We're kind of calling it a proceedings light. And then the editors will add to contextualize the summaries with discussion. And so in the next slides, basically, I will summarize these summaries. And clearly, this is a gross injustice to all speakers, even if I do it correctly. And you can make amends for my transgressions by watching the recordings. I was there, so it's up to you. Okay, so starting off, Duarte had this talk about, you know, freedom to choose what is small and matching UV to heft. There's many, you know, if you have a UV model, you have several different parameters. Choosing which one is small can lead to different expansions And usually one of the choices leads to restriction of the operator space to SMEFT operators, which is good because we're all kind of going for SMEFT. Unfortunately, that choice is not always the fastest converging. So I picked one plot where you can see basically that the yellow power counting, which is the SMEFT power counting, doesn't perform quite as well as an alternative power counting in blue at quadratic order. But you can say they're close, so maybe we're not losing too much. Neither of them are great compared to the full UV model in terms of the dependence on the model parameter, which is this sine of this angle. And you add a scalar field. If you want more information, of course, go watch his talk. Adam Martin was really trying to focus on the fact that the lambda to the negative fourth terms are not as scary if we focus on low vertex count diagrams. Basically, GeoSmith proposes to reorganize dimension six and dimension eight operators to allow for a more pleasant number of operators to consider in fits. For example, if you consider just propagator corrections at dimension six, you have 14, and for three particle vertices, you have 20. And then he shows how if you go to dimension eight, these numbers don't increase dramatically. They go to 19 and 47. But of course, higher multiplicity vertices explode. So that's a motivation for focusing on these let's say leading order diagrams, things that you could actually pick out quite easily.
Yeah. It was interesting to note in that talk in the discussion session, his response with respect to GeoSmeft and next leading order in Alpha S, because then that destroys the relationship and makes this all a bit more thorny. So we have to be a little bit careful at LHC about adopting it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, so William Shepard also provided this, let's say, prescription for how to use the dimension six squared as a theory uncertainty. An idea is that this would provide some output where our result would say model is either unconstrained or potentially constrained, i.e. the exclusion region would rule out this model if you ignored this dimension six squared theory uncertainty. And then you would need model specific searches in the same data to fully determine if you're constraining it. And then finally, with this theory uncertainty allowed, if you're still in the exclusion region, then you can maybe say that this model is definitely constrained. So he liked to make the analogy of like red light, yellow light for UV models. And then there's the prescription that he proposed, which I think needs further discussion to actually implement, but I think it's a good action item for us to understand how to implement this. Okay, going on to reconstruction level results, Sergio made a point that these are generally going to be more accurate and sensitive than unfolding at a cost, right? Because you have a fixed model, so changes must be at detector level. And the big motivation, one example here is you may have developed a search for EFT coefficients with top lepton operators, and then later you decide you care about the lighter quarks as well, and so you have to care about quarks coming, leptons coming up that initial state, and how to fold that in is challenging. There is a possible technical solution where you use some combination of post-generation reweighting, a public signal sample, and a public likelihood. In each of these terms, you'll see these come up often in the talks. So you'll see these themes again. I would say Dorval's main takeaway for us is that we should really embrace spin correlation information, including in hadronic decays. He pointed out that the leptonic decay of a top quark, the lepton is an excellent polar emitter. It provides basically a 1x scaling of this cosine of this theta in terms of the cross-section dependence. In hadronic, it's less, but with enough work, you can get to a number that is not too far from one, so 0.64 with some fancy angular information. And so I think this is a good direction for us to not neglect hadronic decays of tops or even other like vector bosons, because they can carry angular information that is useful for disentangling the tensor structure of vertices. And we'll have more hadronic decays at high momentum, so that's another reason to go for it. Andre focused on explaining sort of the quality hierarchy of observables, if you like, where sort of standard model observables that are just meant to suppress background are the lowest tier EFT sensitive observables like angular information or transverse momenta are more useful in EFT contexts. Obviously, optimal observables, either via a matrix element or machine learning, are optimal for the appropriate definition. And then lastly, you can imagine a full event information. And obviously, the trade-off as you go to higher and higher quality is the modeling complexity, which you discussed at length. And there was kind of this question, you know, should we be pursuing matrix element or machine learning methods for designing optimal observables? And his take was that ML is useful when you have, you know, parton shower effects, missing particles, complicated combinatorics, and when the matrix element is not easily calculable. And when those are not a problem, then matrix element is a lot cleaner and simpler, and you should embrace it, was his main point. Harrison Prosper was encouraging us to look at how to regress the CDF or the test statistic to construct confidence sets. So for background here, you know, traditional simulation-based inference techniques focuses on estimating either the sort of the probability of the data given some model parameter or the probability ratio, which then we usually plug in the data and interpret it as a likelihood or a likelihood ratio of the model parameters data. And so you would estimate this via some machine learning regression technique, and that's what you see in tools like MadMiner. Now, the question is what you do once you have this likelihood ratio test statistic, which, you know, this is the most common test statistic we use. You use that statistic to do hypothesis tests. So this slide and set here is, let's say, textbook confidence region explanation. And the point is that at some point you have to compute a cumulative distribution function of this test statistic and find where the observed value lies in it. Well, the question is, can you use machine learning techniques like conditional quantile regression to estimate that cumulative distribution with lower needs on your simulator? And the answer seems to be yes. So if you're interested in that, you can look at his talk. Okay, on to logistics. So Tom Junk provided an excellent overview of how LEP and Tevatron performed combinations. I think it's really interesting to think how LEP routinely did this with four separate experiments at the same time, with only Fortran callables and auxiliary data files. So it's sort of definitely a back in my day moment. And Tevatron, we saw, you know, increasing complexity and the move to C++ and more frameworks. But nevertheless, the things that you wanted to be able to do, the requirements have not changed even since the LEP days. And so it's nice to see that you know, the tools that we're developing now will meet these requirements and have met the requirements for a long time. Kyle pushed a lot to publish the full statistical model. So this is bringing us back to Sergio's point about how to reinterpret reconstruction level results. Sort of a second level, he also recommended that we define an EFT model specification, exactly how the surrogate likelihood model that we form depends on EFT parameters in a more rigid structure, and to use reanalysis structure infrastructure. And so here, you know, I've just kind of grabbed one example of an effort to publish full statistical models with the HEP statistics serialization standard. And then as soon as I pasted this in here, I realized I took a screenshot of a slide full of screenshots of slides. So clearly we need to go deeper. Michael gave us this very nice overview of why die-top production at EE machines, and clearly only certain EE machines given the top mass, is a really worthwhile endeavor because you can disentangle operator effects with both the polarization and energy scan and really get at a lot of effects and understanding them. So onto unfolded results, Andrew made a statement to the effect of they are an insurance policy, which I think is a nice way of capturing the philosophy. Differential cross-sections may not be optimal EFT probes, but they are always reinterpretable in any VSM scenario, and the machinery is well-established, right? We have He's developed a CFT to OBS tool where you can take any UFO model, plug it through a Rivet routine, and get exactly the model constraints out of that in a very automated way, modular background subtraction. So clearly, we should continue to publish those results. Jonathan pointed out that STXS, the Simplified Template Cross Sections, is a very natural framework for SMEFT interpretations of Higgs results. It kind of meets in the middle between unfolding and full reconstruction level. And of course, it has all the caveats that you would usually find for unfolding. And he made a particular point to focus on acceptance effects, especially in Higgs disease decays, because the Simplified Template Cross Section has nothing to say about decays, and shows some demonstrations of where the acceptance corrections can dramatically change the coefficient dependence of signal strength of a bin yield. Frank wanted to stress that precision Drellian provides a wealth of SMEFT constraints, and he casted it into this traditional angular decomposition, but then extended it to account for angular coefficients that are exclusively brought out by dimension 8 SMEFT behavior. So, we have the traditional decomposition and then these new BI terms that represent angular behavior that you would only see. And so this could be a smoking gun for dimension 8 effects. And so we should continue to produce these Drellian angular decompositions. Okay, on to building a SAMPRO library. So Luca stressed that the PDF is flexible enough to absorb the effects of new physics. There was this demonstration with this toy model with a very heavy W prime that was then matched to SMEFT coefficients and then fit in this toy where the data is the true PDF convolved with the true new physics represented here by EFT expansion. And then the theory would be what you would fit the PDF to the data with the standard model cross section. What you basically see is that the PDF shift is completely compensating for the new physics effects. So the statement is that the new physics is concealed in the fit of the PDF. So his solution for these kinds of problems is twofold. One is to design more conservative PDFs for use with SMEFT fits that don't try to extrapolate as aggressively and have this ability to absorb new physics. And also that we need more forward physics data because it can disentangle PDF and SMEFT effects because they happen at low versus high Q squared. So Andrew discussed how Monte Carlo reweighting is a very powerful tool and significantly reduces our computing needs for modeling EFT effects in full simulation. However, choosing a starting point and validating the statistical power is important and needs careful thought. We definitely need more quantitative prescriptions for this. He demonstrated the qualitative prescriptions that their analysis had gone through and showed what kind of things you want to see, like nicely peaked weights and not a broad distribution. Improved approaches for storing and propagating EFT weights was also a point he raised, that we need to improve our plumbing in CMS software and elsewhere. Charlotte pointed out that a common EFT parameterization is more efficient and accurate, and we should really pursue this. So this is, again, a point that reiterates what Kyle said, right? We need to establish conventions for this because deriving the accurate STXS parameterization is a significant undertaking at the moment, triplicated between CMS, Atlas, and Theoris. So if we can define a common format and be done with it, that would save everyone some time and also reduce bugs. And he had this nice hackathon project where she was trying to automate this process with SnakeMake. Another big hit from that talk was the post-generation reweighting. So Charlotte has derived sort of a module to take events at LHE level and compute alternative matrix element weights. And you can do this even at nano AOD. And so this was brought up also in Sergio's talk, but sort of the full workflow was highlighted here, and that was discussed at length. So that's actually all of the talks we had. I didn't want to go into the discussion because, well, without the context of the talks, the discussion wouldn't have made a ton of sense. But if you want to read about the discussion that we had, you will find it in the note that will be posted on archive in about a month, and we'll send that around. So we had a good time, and consider joining us next time.
All right, thank you, Nick. That was a very nice summary. Are there questions or comments or discussion?
Yeah, maybe we want to go back to Lindsay's comment. I just wanted to go through the slides.
Oh, yeah. But, sorry for butting in there.
Yeah.
So the point here is just that if you start looking at the next leading order in Alpha S and you consider a three-point diagram in EFT space, then you'll automatically get standard model diagrams that look like the four-point diagrams and will interfere with whatever order of, or yeah, your side of the four operators or something like that. I'm sure you can cook up a dimension eight operator that you can find that fits your final state with an additional jet emission. And suddenly you have something that you actually really want to pay attention to in your cross section.
Yeah. Well, what I was wondering if this implied we need to move towards more exclusive, jet counts. Like, so you would do, let's say, VV plus zero jets analysis at high transmission.
Yeah, that might be a way around it to preserve that kind of simplicity.
Because if you can get away from hard radiation, and you're in,
then you can assume your EFT effects are small or constrained by precision observables of some sort.
Yeah, and so I was under the assumption that that was implicit here, that we would have to make cuts on multiplicity, and we don't have anything extra, let's say, in our final states, only what would be produced by the simplest vertices. Right?
Yeah, that would be
that's possible.
Yeah, but we have to make sure that we consider that when we're engineering these analyses in the future, because people often don't do that.
Yeah, I mean, generally it's safer not to, right? You don't want to make a cut because then you have to worry about the jet PT, et cetera. And,
right, you get systematics you really don't want to calculate. But it seems, or at least for this particular deployment of EFT techniques or of EFT measurements, it's something we have to consider to get a consistent result out of it. And it's just not been, and I imagine it being especially difficult to do that kind, to enforce that kind of requirement for top and other things with lots of color charge in the final states.
Right.
I will say that every time I hear Adam talk about this, it always seems very sensible and straightforward while he's talking. And then afterwards, I go, wait, what, how did I think this was simple? I'd forgotten my understanding of it. But.
Yeah. That goes for a lot of things.
Yeah. Yeah. I see a raised hand from Sapta. Go ahead, Sapta.
Yeah, just, and I was really thinking whether I even should raise my hand, but this is just a basic, like a follow-up to exactly what was being discussed. So thinking a bit more about these exclusive jet bins, I was thinking that we, at that point, we really need to consider, or really need to think about what a jet is even, a generator level quantity or reconstructed AK4, AK8, all of that. And then is it AK8 without overlaps with AK4, things like that. So I think it would be very interesting, but, and certainly worth doing. But it also, you know, there are a bunch of questions that arise when you start doing these exclusive, treatment. But people certainly have been doing this for, say, one of the recent analysis that I can think of is the ZZ plus Jets, where they did look into exclusive jet bins. Actually, even WW at 13 TV does it. So it's certainly possible. It's just we have to be very careful with the EFT analysis because we tend to mix different kinds of jets, because we are trying to probe the high transverse momentum region. So yeah, just a comment, I suppose.
So I'll just make a comment regarding the logistics of combining likelihood, which is that I think that we all across CMS and Atlas II need to be doing more to, at the planning the analysis stage, we need to be doing more to plan for our analyses to be combinable.
Yeah, there's lots of cultural shifts that need to happen in order to get this commonplace. Absolutely.
Right. And we absolutely need to seriously pursue some of the things that Kyle was talking about having specifications that are separate from implementation and actually creating and then adhering to those specifications, I think is absolutely worth doing. And I don't know how to actually get it done sociologically. You know, where's the career award for not career award in terms of, like, a prize, but like the progression of career for somebody who spends their time working on this. That's always a difficult sort of question.
It's a directive that you have to convince people that it's worth it to adhere to the rules at the same time that you suggest the rules from somewhere like the LHC working group on EFTs. You have to kind of grow it from the top and the bottom at the same time, otherwise the momentum just dies out and everyone just thermalizes back to doing their own thing. You have to figure out a way to meet in the middle. And how much of that kind of momentum are we missing in from the top, so to speak? From like the LHC working groups, or is there anything we could do with this group to beat people with hammers? Yeah, I know this group is being absorbed or something like that, but
Something like that. Yeah. At least the contacts, the conveners are gradually being merged with the LHC EFT working group contacts. So.
yeah, I mean, in terms of top-down structure for this, it was really helpful that the CMS Collaboration Board approved the statement that we will release all public likelihoods, all analysis likelihoods in the future. Of course, implementing that requirement will be a challenging process for everyone, but it does sort of create the mandate for groups like CAT Stats to develop the necessary tooling, and they have been. So I think that's encouraging. And what I hope is that CAT Stats can interface with HS3 and kind of come to a good conclusion. But I think the story is just starting there now that we have this open likelihood mandate.
That's a good point. That is very helpful. Yeah. Giacomo.
Hi. Yeah, maybe it's more of a question, but follows closely what you were discussing about this. But in this view, for me, it would be very interesting to explore these, let's say, NanoD postmortem reweighting tools, the two decouple from what an analyst has to do in terms of EFT and what we can do in terms of the combination, right? Because if we can analyze EFT after the analysis is done, then we can also, let's say, have a larger pool of analysis to combine for the EFT, right? But I know that I mean, sometimes, I mean, this is not a general tool. I mean, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. So I was wondering whether there were some comments and things that can be developed in order to make the reweighting work in an arbitrary scenario.
Yeah, so I think Sergio went into this a bit more. Basically, you know, if you have somewhere stored, let's say the matrix element level kinematics of your signal samples, then in principle, that plus the bin that those events were assigned to in your final fit is sufficient information to do a fully, fully rigorous reweighting and reanalysis later using the post-generation reweighting, to the extent that post-generation reweighting can accurately give you the matrix element ratio for, say, this kind of process over this kind of process as a function of the outgoing kinematics, which is a bit non-trivial statement, right? It may not be the case that closes, but the hope is that it does, and therefore we can, like you say, you know, have analyses at reconstruction level, you know, go through the process without worrying too much about EFT, and then later on adding that interpretation. But, you know, that doesn't remove issues like event overlaps and how to deal with correlating systematics across analyses that haven't traditionally been combined. Then that's still going to be challenging, even without the EFT complexity. But yeah, I think this is a good point, and maybe we can. Well, I shouldn't say maybe we can see evidence of this, because we have seen evidence of this. Jonathan talked about explicitly doing this. I didn't have time to talk about it, but if you look at his talk, you know, in SCXS, we are looking at acceptance corrections of existing Higgs measurements and folding in EFT effects on acceptance for the legacy Higgs combination. So that tooling is actively being deployed in the case of Higgs. But to see a wider audience, I think we'll need to spend more time and have more people investigating it.
Yes, I agree. I fully agree. I mean, I tried this procedure, but the problem was that basically it assumes that the starting point is a standard model most of the time. I mean, from the central nanoD or whatever.
So right. That
is, I mean, in some cases, it can lead to really, really unphysical prediction for the EFT for complex processes. So,
yeah. But, you, it's hard to reweight when you have to divide by zero. That's for sure.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions or comments? All right. Well, thank you very much, Nick, for an excellent summary. And I hope to see everybody at the next LPC EFT workshop.
Me too.
And I think that's it for this meeting. So thank you, everybody, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.